Meet the People of MCB with Chip Haley and Denny Huff. Brought to you by the Missouri Council of the Blind. Now, let's meet the people. Welcome to Meet the People of MCB. I'm Denny Huff.
And I'm Chip Haley. And we are back and better than ever. At least I am anyway. And I'm looking forward to today's interview.
I am also. And we have someone that really hasn't been a member of MCB for many years. I don't know if she'll tell us more about that. But Deborah Witt, good morning. And thanks for joining us on Meet the People.
Thank you for having me.
You are from Springfield, Missouri, correct?
Yes, currently.
And tell us a little bit about your vision.
About my vision. Well,
or lack of vision.
My vision loss is due to a childhood accident that I had when I was five. We were living in Norfolk, Virginia. My father was military, and I was playing with a couple of little boys from the neighborhood in the backyard, and we tied one up. We were playing Cowboys and Indians, and they had to go home for lunch. It was August. I do remember that, and we couldn't get him untied, so my father had left a butcher knife out on a work table in the garage with something he was doing earlier, and the boy's brother could see it through the door and ran and grabbed it and came back and was cutting the rope. And I, like the typical curious child, was bending over looking at what he was doing, and the knife flew out of his hand my left eye. My father arrived home within a few minutes after this. It was late in the afternoon, and I do remember, I have vague memories. Of course, how much you remember and how much what you remember is what you were told.
Right, yeah.
Years later, it's really hard to distinguish between the two. I believe in my mind that I do have memories of being put to a car, being shoved a bunch of towels in my face, and my father driving frantically because we had sort of lived out of the main city, and this is back in 1964 too. So I was told that he had stopped at a couple of urgent care centers, but they were not prepared for that kind of injury. So he had to drive me all the way into D.C. And I lost the left eye, and the right eye was perfectly fine. But within a few months, I developed what they called sympathetic ophthalmy, which basically means my right eye started to suffer from the trauma of the left eye. And by nine, I had developed glaucoma and the beginnings of cataract. Of course, this is the days before cataract laser surgery. And also, in the days before they even knew how to handle glaucoma in children, because prior to the internet, if you think about it, which is wonderful for information, doctors only had what knowledge they had, or they had time to read magazines. And I remember my parents being told that there were no treatments for glaucoma in young children, because they mainly saw that in older people. They did put me on, you know, steroid drops. I spent 18 months during my accident. When I was five, I was in the National Institute of Health, NIH, for 18 months, a very formative period in my life. especially since I was delegated to the 13th floor where they normally put the patients that were terminally ill. So at a very early age, I was introduced to death. I would see the bodies being wheeled out of rooms. They had me on very high doses of steroids to keep my vision from getting worse, because I guess back in the early 60s, steroids was like the current be-all, end-all to everything. And I blew up like a pumpkin. And it was so bad. Oh, my God. My grandmother, thank God she could sew, made all my clothes because she couldn't even find anything to fit me. But once they had me off the steroids when I was 8 and I slimmed down and started to deal with the fact that I was developing, like I said, by 9, the cataract glaucoma, and I had tunnel vision. And that went on throughout my life, and I did not find out until I was pregnant with my third child, which was in my early 30s. I had noticed that my vision was getting worse and worse, because up until then I could see like large print. I could see items, say, within a few feet of me, mm-hmm. and tell what they were and colors. But by the time I had my third child, I no longer could read print at all. And my doctor that I had at the time, the eye doctor, he was the first one to tell me that having children had greatly reduced my vision. Because while you're pregnant, your pressure goes up. And since at that time, my daughter was born in 88, they still did not know how the drops they had you take for your pressure for glaucoma would affect an unborn child. Every time I had a child or I would get pregnant, they would take me off of my medication and my pressure would just go way, way up there. And so, but anyway, and at this point in time, many, many years since then, I can see, I'm totally, of course, blind in the left eye because it's a prosthetic from the accident. And the right eye, I tell people I do not have reliable vision. I can see light, some colors, red normally. So most of my house is done in red. And, but to distinguish features or anything, I told someone once about 15 years ago, a nun asked me what I could see. And I told her that I could tell, since she was in a black habit and up against a light colored wall, that there was something there. But she could be a hat rack or she could be a dog. She could be anything I wanted her to be. Anyway, and you know, but I've kept what little I have a lot longer than they had predicted. They told my parents I would be total before the age of 30, and I am well past that. And so it's pretty much light perception, I would say, at this point. So I guess that answers your question.
That was interesting. Now I know you haven't lived in Springfield very, very long, but where did you come from? Where'd you move from?
Oh my God, Benny, that's the question that I usually respond with a question. In what year?
Okay, so you moved around quite a bit. I know yes. You talk a lot about Ireland. Have you lived in Ireland or just visited there or what?
No, I actually, and I had been a Randolph Shepherd in Indiana for a few years, and after I had divorced my second husband and I left Indiana and returned or went to Florida, my daughter had decided that's where she wanted to do her college in St. Augustine. I had decided at that time to return to school, and I had gotten my first master's with in Kalamazoo and at the university there. When I was graduating in 2015, I had done some research for a paper. And basically, the project was to design what you felt would be your ideal community. So I started to do a lot of research, and I was surprised how many communities, self-sustained communities, are out there worldwide. And I had come across an article about Camp Hill communities. And when I started to investigate Camp Hill, I discovered they were all over the world. It is a community model which was started right after World War II. And the first was set up in Aberdeen, Scotland. And they have expanded. And basically, they're communities that were set up for originally people with cognitive disabilities. And they have branched out, but mainly it's still focused on those individuals. And I started to see that they had volunteer and work opportunities. So I decided, what the heck, let's give it a try. So I reached out to 24 different communities. I heard back from 12, and only one was able to offer me a position in 2015. Two others were willing to offer me something in 2016. But I rearranged my life and decided to take an opportunity being offered that I figured I would probably never get again, and went to Ireland in 2015 to Camp Hill Dunshane, which is the way the postal codes read, it is Camp Hill Dunshane, Naas, Ireland. And it was interesting. A lot of them are farm type based living. They have greenhouses and livestock. People live in various communal houses, share the work. I was a work supporter. So they mainly brought me over because they had a couple of individuals living there that were blind, which was not their norm. And they wanted someone to come over and do some independent living teaching. Mm-hmm. Also to show them that they can do other things besides limit themselves.
Right.
So that was my main purpose of there. And I was there for about 9 months before I injured my foot and had to return to the U.S.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's a shame. Chip?
Yeah, Deborah, in your travels, specifically here in the United States and the different states where you've lived, were you... involved with other state blind consumer organizations like you are here in Missouri with the Missouri Council of the Blind? You mentioned, like maybe in Indiana or Michigan, other places where you've lived. Did you get involved in those state blind consumer organizations?
Yes, I have been involved. Even if they weren't blind, I've done a lot of volunteer work. I was very involved in the Scouts when my children were in Scouts. I worked, did volunteer work with the Food Harvest in Charlotte, North Carolina. I created their media contact list. That was the early days of computer. I've always been involved in that. Let me just rewind a little bit. Until I had gone through my first divorce, which was in the early 90s, and I had met a lovely woman named Kay Townsend with the Metroline Association for the Blind in Charlotte, North Carolina. I had never really interacted or been around other blind people, except for the 1 year my family sent me to the School for the Blind in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So I was not really familiar with any of the organizations. she really opened my eyes, gave me a lot of information, helped me get my first guide dog, got me introduced to the local National Federation for the Blind, which was in Charlotte, and is still the primary blind organization there. And also Metroline Association for the Blind. I got to really meet a lot of other blind people and understand what was going on, issues with political issues. Got very interested in advocacy. I'd already had to do a lot of advocacy for myself in schools and for my children for various reasons, but I had never looked at it on a wider scale. So all of that interested me, and my grandmother was always one to encourage people to do good and to share what you have with others. And my grandfather was definitely in Louisiana. That's where my family origins are. My grandfather was extremely involved his whole life in the Shriners. He was a Mason, all sorts of organizations. They were always involved in community outreach. So I sort of picked it up from there and found a focus. And from there on, everywhere I did go, I reached out to the local blind organizations if I could find a council affiliate to join, or an association, or anywhere that I could be of help, because I feel that everybody has talent. Even if we're not aware of our talents, we have talents, and we should all work together to make the world a better place. In fact, the Camp Hill motto is that everyone in a community has special talents and gifts, and it is the community's responsibility to help each individual discover their gifts so that they can add those gifts to the good for the community at large.
You know, for I think you came to MCB in 2018, was it? Yeah. I first met you there at our convention in 2018, I believe it was in Jeff City. And yeah. Since that time, though, Deborah, you have just really plunged in up to your eyebrows, I guess, in activity with the MCB, including being chair of the Resource and Development Committee. I guess it's called the Fundraising Committee now. But you've sponsored some events, raised some money for MCB, but you have a special event coming up in February. Why don't you tell us about that?
Oh, yes. Thank you for that. We are having... Well, it was supposed to be an annual auction. We had originally planned for November, but due to various things going on and COVID, of course, we can thank COVID for a lot of things. We had to push it out. And so we are having this event in February the 12th. It's a Saturday at 2:00. And I would encourage everyone listening to Zoom in during this event and see what sort of items you would like to bid. And the money raised, of course, will help the MCB to further various projects that they are involved in. And we do have some interesting, for those that like chocolate, we have a couple of baskets from the Chocolate Factory. And Carl Chapel was able to get us one of those kimono grills, I think they're called, which I understand are very nice.
Those ceramic grills, right?
Ceramic.
Yeah.
Thank you. And of course, Curtis Noriega, he has donated a set of jewelry that he has created that will be for auction. Oh, and there's several other things. We've got gift cards, of course. We will have some snack baskets. Of course, we also have a couple of things for puppies. Mm-hmm. So we have a Purina gift basket. So there, I think there'll be something for everyone, no matter what your interest is. Now, and if not, it's just a good thing to come and listen to.
Yeah. How will they find out how to join on that auction? Can they call the office, I guess, and get the information?
Yes, they can, but it will be hosted on the MCB Zoom. So anyone that has done the MCB chats or any of the other MCB Zoom meetings, it is that Zoom link. The link will also be posted on the MCB website.
Okay.
So for people to be able to click on that and join the auction.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
Yeah, again, Deborah, I can't tell you how much we really appreciate your joining MCB because of all your talents, your experiences. I mean, you just listening to you, you just sit back and every time you're saying something, I'm just like, wow, wow, wow. And so we are just so tickled, so thrilled that you decided to join MCB. And believe me, you know, we certainly want to take advantage of, you know, all the experiences, education, talents that you have. I know, too, that you are the Chronicle editor. As Denny mentioned, you are the chair of the fundraising committee. You're working with me on public relations. So you are really involved. And as Denny said, you just plunged in and just, you know, taken off. And again, you know, that's the kind of people that we like to have join MCB. But let me ask you, what was it about MCB that attracted you, or was there anything about MCB that attracted you that you thought, you know, that you really wanted to be a part of this organization?
Well, Chip, I guess the person that sort of told me about the MCB and got me interested in the various opportunities that would be available to me to throw my energies into was Donna Geiger. And she was a lovely lady, mm-hmm, and full of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And she was so enthusiastic about the MCB that I had to explore it further. And I saw what they were doing and wanted to be part of it and offer my talents, abilities, and energy. So I find, you know, I think it's interesting that there's so many members. I think a lot of members may not realize that even if they cannot physically get involved, there are other things that they can do to help the organization. I mean, a lot can be done just with a simple phone call. So I would like to encourage people, especially the members at large, to think about that, to ask what they can do, even if it's just one time a year, because it does make a difference in people's lives. And I have seen how it's grown. I think you all have been around the MCB since 1956. So that says a lot about an organization.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Deborah, I know, too, that you are a guide dog handler. Why don't you tell us the name of your current dog and how many dogs have you had?
Well, sadly, Chip, I am currently in between dogs. I have had 6 dogs in my life. That's 2 of them did not work out, or actually 3. So they were short-lived, but, you know, not every match is perfect in the beginning. My last dog I had was named Karma. She was from Leader Dog, a little black lab, and she went to Ireland with me. That was an experience all of its own. Learning how to get the dog over there internationally, how many days you had to do this test or this exam. And I mean, I was biting my nails, and we flew over together, and She was, in fact, they even gave her an Irish passport when we landed in Ireland. She had a little doggy Irish passport. And she was a big help. I really enjoyed having Karma, and I packed her up. We went and we took 2 weeks off from work, and we took a Ryanair flight over to Scotland, and we bummed around Scotland, just the two of us.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd showed up for a tour in Edinburgh at a tour bus, and the gentleman is standing there in front of me waiting, and everybody's on the bus, and I'm waiting. And finally he says to me, well, where's the rest of your party? And I'm like, well, Karma's here, I'm here, we're it. So he says, nobody else is with you? And I said, no. He says, well, jump on board. Let's have some fun. So he was very great. He waited for me. I think I showed up. I was there a week, and he was there every day I showed up to find out what tour they were doing. And while we were there, we even went to Far Scotland, and I toured their guide dog school there. So, but when I injured myself and had to return to the U.S., it was very obvious. I had torn my tendon and some ligaments, they eventually found out, and I just could not care for her. Mm-hmm. So she was five at the time, and it was just, it was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But you do what's best, like you do for your children. You do what's best for the dog. And I had reached out to her puppy raiser, who I had stayed in touch with. And they were, in fact, they had trained. She was their 27th guide dog they had trained, puppy raised.
Wow.
So they brought her back. We made arrangements through Leader Dog. And they took her back. And eventually, a neighbor of theirs, who is a, I believe, a freelance journalist, ended up adopting her. And so she still gets to travel. I stay in touch with Scott and hear about their adventures. But I am looking to get a new dog. And with COVID, of course,
once again.
Well,
Deborah, Chip mentioned that you're editor of the Missouri Chronicle. And I believe you have some new features you're wanting to add, some things you're wanting to do with the Chronicle. Can you share with the listeners maybe some of those, unless you want those to be a surprise? But I know you do want more contributions to the Chronicle, so just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, of course. Thank you, Danny. And of course, you came up with the name of one section that I intend to put in, which is the Chronicle Comicals. That's a tongue twister. I don't know that you want to say that after a few drinks. So, yeah, anyone that might have some little cute riddles or jokes, please submit them through the email. And I will get them. I would like to start that because everything, you know, every day goes better if you've got a chuckle in it. Mm-hmm. So I do like to have that. I am going to be interviewing next week a lady in Ireland who does a Zoom art class, and it's more like art appreciation. Her name is Claire McLaughlin, and she's been doing this since 2014. And at this point, she's got people that Zoom in from at least four different countries. She'll send you a packet, and it's a different way of looking at art. So I'll be talking to her and doing a write-up about her. And I know that a few people have approached me about bringing back the lower left-hand drawer, which I did read some of those, and the gentleman that did them previously, I can't remember his name.
John Wiedlich did them.
Yes. They're incredible. I will have to tell you, I was very impressed. I don't know that I will be up to his standards, but I am going to give it a good shot. And so I'm hoping to bring that back and some other things in the kitchen and health and that kind of stuff. So
good. And people can submit articles or information, and especially from the affiliates. We'd like to hear news, what's going on in each affiliate. So they can send that to cron@moblind.org. Send your articles in to Deborah, and she'll be glad to get it in the Chronicle. Chip, you want to ask your famous last question?
I certainly do, and thank you, Denny. Deborah, I always like to ask this question of every person that we interview, so I'll put it before you. And that is there anything about Deborah Whitt that really nobody really knows anything about? And I'm sure there's a lot about you from just listening to you. You mentioned, had spent time in Ireland, Scotland, and I think maybe you've visited other countries overseas, if you'd like to share that. But is there really anything about Deborah Whitt that really nobody knows that you wouldn't mind sharing?
Well, I can say this. I do know that I have often been told by people that I can be a Debbie Downer because I tend to look at a situation and I find the flaws or the problems. But it's not because I am a protagonist. I'm an optimist. Because I do believe that by failing to prepare, you're preparing to fail. So you have to look at all angles of a situation. I do believe that everyone has something to offer, even if it's just your next door neighbor. So I guess that's a philosophy. I always loved my classes in college concerning ethics and moralities and how people come to believe what they believe. But we're all different, but we're all together. That would be probably it. And also I got to meet the president of Ireland while I was over
there.
I was told I'm very tenacious, which is a good and bad thing. And just to make a very long story short, I was at the Vision Sports Ireland games that were held in May every year, and this was in 2016, and the president of Ireland, of course, the president there is more of a figurehead. He doesn't have real power. That's their prime minister. But still, and he was there presenting, and there was a woman there in the crowd that was crying. Her name was Roisin, and I found out that she was upset that she was supposed to be more participating in this whole procedure, and then they pulled the plug by telling her they didn't need her to introduce the president and all this. So she was very upset. And so I asked her, I said, "So you really want to meet your president?" And she said, "Yes." So I said, she had a guide dog, I had a guide dog. I said, "Grab on, you're going to meet your bloody president." So through the crowd we went, and the president's coming down with all the people, and his wife Sabina was there, and he's walking, and they had kept saying, "No photos, no photos." And I yelled out the one thing I learned to say in Gaelic, which is "Conas tattoo." It means, "How are you?" And I yelled it out because I knew he spoke Gaelic. And he comes over, he stops, and he starts talking to me in Gaelic. And I'm like, "Well, I don't know anything else. I just don't know what to do." But he was a very lovely gentleman. He was a spitting image of what one would believe a leprechaun looks like. And he did agree to have a picture with Roisin and me, with our guide dogs. I told him I thought it would be a very nice diplomatic show of support. I guess that was one of my highlights.
Well, Deborah, we appreciate you taking your time to be on Meet the People of MCB, and we'll be watching out for your advancement through the organization. I'm sure that you've got places to go, and you'll get there. You've got a great attitude, and appreciate all that you've done so far, and looking forward to more. So, anything you'd like to say in closing?
Just thank you for having me here, and both of you are great examples of individuals who have put a lot of effort and time into this organization and have made it what it is today. So you've got a lot of big shoes for people to follow.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I only wear a size 10 now. Chip, he's like a 14 or so. But, thank you, folks, for listening to Meet the People of MCB. If you have someone that you would like for Chip and I to interview, please give me a call at 636-428-1500 or give Chip a call at
417-540-9703. And you know, ladies and gentlemen, too, we would love to hear from you. You can call Denny, call me, let us know what you think about Meet the People of MCB. We would really appreciate it.
You bet. And thanks again, Deborah, and God bless you all. Have a great time, and be sure and listen again. You might even hear yourself on here.